Just want to let everybody know that Lake Tahoe was awesome. No, it was nice to get away and have a little break, which is really awesome. Thanks, Dave, for last week for preaching. It was pretty cool. Thank you. We're continuing on with this theme of rhythms, right? So the first week we talked about the rhythms in our own life. We had the term pattern of spiritual movement. Kind of has like a musical theme to it. We talked a little bit about Saint Benedict, where he would view everything in life, the silent time, where you ate, what scriptures you read, the people that you interacted with, that everything is holy unto God. How he craved the thing that Jesus was, the deeper understanding of who that was. And today, we're going to talk about the gathering. Not the Kevin Bacon show, where it's kind of crazy. But the rhythm of gathering, I know, it's okay. But the rhythm of gathering, right? So one of the first questions when I was kind of prepping all this was like, why do we gather as humans, right? We tend to want to do that. When we gather in a church-like setting or a Bible time setting, what should happen when we gather together? And then who should we be gathering with? So we're going to break those down a little bit here. So again, why do we gather as human beings, right? And when I was prepping for this, I kept thinking about it and kept thinking about it. And you know what we're going to do? Daniel, why don't you throw that picture up on the screen? We're going to go back to that concert that I talked about 2 weeks ago. So I don't know what your guys' thoughts about what a concert looks like. At least for me, when I go, it's usually in a low, dim bar somewhere, right? And so that's one of my favorite bands, Emery, all right? So we talked about how the drummer kind of keeps the pace. He sets the tone for the entire group. And then there's a bunch of crazy people jumping around, like pumping their fists in the air, you know, a lot of times. That's usually what we do at those kinds of concerts. But the music is on, right? The band's ready to rock, and we zoom out, right? We zoom out to the crowd, right? So there's a couple hundred of us in this group. And after then, I was kind of processing that concert time there, because it was loud. So, you know, so you lose your hearing, which is usually the first thing that happens. But if I think about it, I go, why did I show up to this thing? What caused Tiffany and I to even want to go there in the first place? Because we very well could have seen this exact show on the internet by ourselves. Right? Mm-hmm. And then another question that I thought of. So something's pulling me to group together. So then what pulls me to group together next to a sweaty dude who hasn't worn deodorant in like 2 weeks? All right, that happens. That happens a lot. Why is that guy here? Why are all these other people here? The term electricity tends to get used whenever you get to a large group setting like that. There's something electric in the air. We can all feel it. It's just kind of like this sense that I'm connected to these people that I have no clue who they are. These strangers that we're sharing something. There's a shared experience going on at this time. That maybe I could find brothers and sisters in this group of sweaty, fist-pumping, mosh-pit-thrashing outcasts and rebels. And it kind of hit me that the gathering experience means that we experience something bigger a lot of times. The gathering experience should change us, right? So I know a lot of you, you know, probably aren't super musically inclined, which is okay. What about superheroes, right? So Daniel, why don't you throw this video up? We're going to watch a video that even superheroes need to group together. Even Batman, the loneliest of the lonely superheroes, right, needs others like him to feel complete. Man, that's pretty cool. Man, we can just stop there. All right, everybody, let's just go home. No, but I don't care if you're a nerd or a geek, an introvert, an extrovert, find yourself yourself somewhere in between, a school teacher, a stay-at-home mom, a business owner, a hermit, you don't think you're good enough kind of person, even though if you think your life is lame or uneventful, here's the big truth with it all, right? Life happens when we get together. The room should fill with electricity when we do that. And we should expect something to happen when we gather. So, let's go ahead and turn to Matthew 13 here. If you know anything about Jesus, you'll know that crowds often gathered around him, right? It was pretty common for this Jesus guy to accumulate followers. So we're going to kind of go back and forth a little bit here, which should be fine. So we're going to start in Matthew 13. Okay. Everybody there? Okay, one person's almost there, right? All right, so we're going to read Matthew chapter 13. We're going to read just the first two verses. It reads like this. Later that same day, Jesus left the house and sat beside the lake. A large crowd soon gathered around him, so he got onto a boat. Then he sat there and taught the people. He sat there and taught the people, stood on the shore. All right? And then, yeah, we'll stop right there. Cool. So again, people gathered to Jesus, and it seemed like he'd been doing some pretty interesting things. All right? But what were those things that he was doing that would cause such a crowd? And I'm pretty sure it probably wasn't like two or five people. I'm pretty sure it was a pretty big crowd. So what I figured, let's go back and see just some of the things that Jesus did that would have produced a crowd this size. So we're just going to go back a chapter. We're going to go to Matthew chapter 12. And we're going to read verses 1 through 3. All right, here we go. Matthew chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. It says, "At that, and about that time, Jesus was walking through some grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, so they began breaking off some heads of grain and eating them. But some Pharisees saw them do this and protested, 'Look, your disciples are breaking the law by harvesting the grain on the Sabbath.'" All right. Seems about normal, right? For us, we can eat whenever we want. But in the old times, when Jesus was around, working on the Sabbath and harvesting grain was something you did not do. That was a big no-no, right? But Jesus did this publicly for all to see, because obviously the Pharisees saw this. He didn't do it in secret. And why? Because he was starting something, starting to break some molds that people needed to see. All right, so that's number one. Started off easy, right? Oh, Jesus just did a little slap on the hand. Okay, he took a little grain on a day that he wasn't supposed to. Okay, sounds good. He ups the ante here. So we're going to go read verses 9 through 14 of the same chapter. So starting in verse 9, it says, "Then Jesus went over to the synagogue, where he noticed a man with a deformed hand. The Pharisees asked Jesus, 'Does the law permit a person to work by healing on the Sabbath?' They were hoping he would say yes, so they could bring charges against him. And he answered, 'If you had a sheep that fell into a well on the Sabbath, wouldn't you work to pull it out? Of course you would. How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Yes, the law permits a person to do good on the Sabbath.' Then he said to the man, hold out your hand. So the man held out his hand, and it was restored, just like the other one. Then the Pharisees called a meeting to plot how to kill Jesus. Number two, Jesus healed a man on the Sabbath. So not only are we just talking about, okay, he's taking some grain and people are seeing that, okay, Jesus is doing something sort of rebel-ish, right? But he also heals a man on a day that you're not supposed to do anything. Again, this was public. He was at the synagogue where there was probably more than just a small group of people. People were watching this man, this rebel rabbi of sorts, blow their mind. Of course, that makes some people angry, right? The Pharisees weren't too happy, and they were plotting to kill him. Leading up into chapter 13, Jesus does all kinds of stuff. He casts out a demon of a possessed man, spoke out against religious leaders, which tend to be a pretty common thing, and challenged their ideas. So if I'm Jewish in that time, and I see this rabbi doing these crazy things around me, why wouldn't I gather around this Jesus guy? Right? Jesus was breaking down walls that the religious leaders had built up. So they had put into place unquestioned regulations and rules that were used to manipulate the people. The ideas of authority and who even has authority over with God and with Jesus, who can have it? Jesus was saying that all days are holy. So these people that are starting to gather around Jesus, their view and idea of God, of who God is, grew wider and deeper. And they wanted to be set free. Now, we're going to go back to chapter 13, right? So we saw the cool things that Jesus did that would have caused this crowd to gather. And Jesus, being that he's God, kind of understands us simple humans, right? He understands where we are. He's walked where we walked. He's done all these things. And he gets us pretty well. And he knows that when we gather together, something should happen. And he knows that when we gather together, it's our choice to determine how we experience that. So we're going to go ahead and read. Let's going to read the beginning of verse 13 all over again, starting in verse 1, and we're going to go all the way through verse 9. So Matthew 13. So it says, later that same day, Jesus left the house and sat beside the lake. A large crowd soon gathered around him, so he got into a boat. Then he sat there and taught as the people stood on the shore. He told many stories in the form of parables, such as this one. All right, Jesus is going to break it down. He says, listen, a farmer went out to plant some seeds. As he scattered them across the field, some seeds fell on a footpath, and the birds came and ate them. Other seeds fell on shallow soil with underlying rock. The seeds sprouted quickly because the soil was shallow, but the plant soon wilted under the sun, and since they didn't have deep roots, they died. Other seeds fell amongst thorns that grew up and choked out the tender plants. Still, other seeds fell on fertile soil. They produced a crop that was 30, 60, and even 100 times as much as he had planted. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. Now, are there any farmers in here? Make-believe farmers, sort of farmers. Yeah, we got some farmers in here. I don't farm. My family comes from a long line of black thumbs, basically. We can barely grow grass for the most part. So Jesus breaks this down, right? He sees the crowd. He sees everybody. If I was to go to that concert there, he's similar experience. Wanting to experience something bigger. Jesus gives us some choices as to how we could respond to him. The first way I call bird food, right? There will be some in the crowd that will choose not to attempt to try, to reject Jesus, to live their lives the way that they want to. I kind of call them like, they would be like atheists of sorts, right? And of course, there's tons of people that live their life that way. Business owners, people who make bajillions of dollars, poor people. There are people in every demographic that fall into this category. He gives us a second option of what happens. Shallow roots, right? I kind of get an image of like, they tried, but the relationship with Jesus is kind of superficial. It doesn't really mean much to them. I would even probably say that would be like a cultural Christian of sorts. They just say they go to church, but they really don't like go to church. That's not very common here in California. Most folks would just say, I just don't go to church, I don't believe. Whereas other places like in the South, they would say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. And when you ask them the last time they went to church, it was like last Easter. They'd be the same people that say it wasn't worth the time. It was a fleeting or temporary experience, not something that lasted very long. This third kind of description that Jesus gives us is an interesting one. They had this idea of being choked out, that the plant was choked out. A big, stronger word would be like to strangle something, right? That's pretty messed up. I think this is someone who tries, but something always gets them, right? They get the life choked out of them. They're in a pattern or a habit or a rhythm that is unhealthy, but at the same time, they still want Jesus. They want to find a way out. But then a lot of times, there's no accountability built into that. So a lot of Christians, all of us here, can experience that and do experience that daily, hourly, minutely. We see it on the news all the time with Christian leaders and things of that nature. I don't know if anybody's ever heard on the news Ashley Madison before. Yeah? So I didn't know about that this website existed until like 2 weeks ago. If you're not familiar with it, it's a site that's used for married people, like you have to be married, well, they don't have to be, but for married people to have affairs. Like, I thought that only happened on like the deep web or something like that. But no, this is a legitimate website where a married person can go on, register their account, have an account. It blows my mind that you people would even do that. Come to find out, 39 million people thought that was an okay thing. Right? Yeah. This tells you, it speaks into the heart of a man. Usually, the statistics also say that like 35 million of them were dudes. So, dudes, come on. So I did a little bit of math, right? I think this account was more than just the United States, but I'm just going to use the United States in general, right? So, there's 245 million adults, 18 and over, in the United States right now. If we were to take 39 million people and divide that, that's like 1 in 8 people that you could possibly know that had an account. What? What? Where are we going with that? That just blew my mind when I did that. But it's common. Super common. We see folks, Christian leaders like Josh Duggar from the 18 Kids and Counting, already was in hot water before with the molestation thing, accounts that he did. But it comes to find out that he had an account. And here's somebody who a lot of people would say, oh, he's a Christian leader and he does Christian things. But man, he had a paid account. He cheated on his wife. His life, his family life, and everybody's life that he's in contact with has been changed. Those thorns choked him out and got him. But again, as humans, who here loves accountability? Everybody raise their hand who loves to be accountable to somebody, right? Daniel, put your hand down. Jim. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I bet the argument would be as you get older, you find accountability more and more useful in your life, right? When you're younger, you're like, I don't need to be accountable to anybody. I'm just me. I can do whatever I want. I don't like accountability, but we got to have it, right? When that happened, when I read that and all that, I called Tiffany like right away, and I was like almost crying because it's like Josh Duggar is just like everybody else here. He's me, right? Just a dude, a guy, and I was just flabbergasted me that it would progress something that far. And I don't want to say who's to blame or whatever like that, but it seems like in Western Christianity as we have it, as we see it now in this current age, or at least in the previous generation, we would say that we don't talk about the things that we struggle with to other people. But as I tend to read and listen to, we see a resurgence of accountability in a positive way done correctly. Because keeping it to yourself doesn't work, clearly, right? We need each other to make us better, better people, and better Jesus followers. And even if Josh talked to somebody about these things, talked to anybody, who saw the red flags and didn't say anything, right? It just blows my mind. When we get together, when we get together in groups, when we gather together intentionally, something should happen. So there's other groups, right, that we see in secular culture. We see have like Narcotics Anonymous, AA, and a lot of those started with Christian roots, but they kind of become secularized. But the Narcotics Anonymous guys, they kind of get that pretty well. I was walking in, and they were in there, and I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but I just stood in the kitchen and listened for a little bit. You should, okay, good. Whew. I just like confessed that on. It's okay. So I stood and listened, right? And there's this, you hear the stories of these people that are going through some pretty tough times. And hopefully some of them are there on their own will, hopefully, and some of them are there because the court said you had to go. But sharing something together produces change. That's kind of why they're there, for the accountability. If we could be a little more open with our struggles with each other, talk about stuff, dig down, resolve, build bridges, mend wounds, that maybe we can represent Jesus a little bit more accurately. That takes time. Well, not really time. That just takes courage, I think. But we don't want to do it, right? It just gets all, ugh. So if I ask the question, who's ready to share right now? Who's ready to go? Huh? No, it wouldn't be appropriate. So Jesus gives us not one, not two, not three, but a fourth choice that I think sounds pretty good. So we're going to read it again here. Verse 8 of chapter 13. So still, other seeds fell on fertile soil, and they produced a crop that was 30, 60, and even 100 times as much as been planted. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. I want to be this fertile soil that Jesus talks about in this passage. Again, this fertile soil, that word in the Greek, I find over and over and over as I study, and it's kalos. It's something that's excellent or surpassing, precious and useful, suitable, commendable, admirable, genuine, and approved. This is someone who is ready, someone who is called, someone who craves deeply. that when Jesus touches our lives, corporately and in group and individually, we can't help but share that. So imagine you go back to that concert, right? You leave the concert when you're all done and you had a great time. What do you want to do? You put it on Facebook, right? So everybody could see how good of a time that you had. You can't help but share these things, the good things that God is doing in your life. You embrace the journey. You take time to recognize that still small voice of God that maybe, if we choose option four most of the time, if we choose option four, that maybe we could be the catalyst or the person for those who are hurting. That maybe our story, similar like Narcotics Anonymous, their story helps other people, that our story can help other people. So, imagine with me, right? This is a big dream, but I feel like it's on its way. That when we gathering together, expecting for Jesus to do something amazing, that we expect Jesus to do something amazing. That in the crowd that we are in awe of Jesus, that we share our struggles with each other and decide to live openly. Choose option four in the parable and become more genuine and authentic Jesus followers. Because when that happens, this world will truly be changed. So you're in a group of people. You're in a crowd. You're anywhere. You want to start a group or something like that. We can't do this alone, right? Because if you constantly put yourself alone with yourself, you tend to think in circles. Proverbs 27, verse 17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. So I'm going to have the worship team come on up. Whether in a group setting, whether you're gathering together as a large group to talk about Jesus, or you're talking about somebody one-on-one, who in your life makes you sharper? Who challenges your ideas? Who makes you believe what you believe? Now, that's it. I like that third one there, because I think a lot of times doubt kind of gets a bad rap a lot of times. You know, if you doubt God or you doubt Jesus or you doubt the things that you believe, that's okay, because I think that if you start with what you believe and you go around and you test it, you pray about it, you research it, and if it gets you to a different place that you thought, like a different or a higher understanding, that's okay. Who makes you believe what you believe? So, the rhythm of gathering is just that. The gathering, the people. We can't do it alone. We have to have somebody or some group or something of that nature. Batman gets it. Come on, guys. If Batman can get it, then by golly, I think we could get it too. I hear you. We need to expect that Jesus will do something when we gather. But it's our choice as to what it is that the fruit from that is. So I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to have the worship team take it away. Heavenly Father, I just pray for a spirit of courage here in this group. I just pray that to become better Jesus followers, that we would gather and talk and communicate and share burdens, Lord, and live lives that are open. To know that when we do those things, that we represent you in a more authentic way. Lord, if we don't have somebody, Lord, I pray that you would just put that person in our lives, that thought on their heart, for that person to be there. Because ultimately we want to become and know and be more like you. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this today. And we just pray this in your name. Amen.